Hi, and welcome to yet another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Please like and subscribe. We have now over 250 videos, I can't believe I've been saying that, on the YouTube channel. And we're continuing to chat to incredible people now in relation to all things leadership and leaders. So you don't want to miss this particular episode because I'm going to be talking to a wonderful CEO of an iconic business. But when you become the CEO of an iconic business, a business that's been featured in Hollywood films, a business that's been featured in global magazines, is that legacy a benefit or a burden? When you come in and you take on the role of CEO and then you hit with a pandemic, you probably learn a few things as well. So this is a wonderful episode where we ask a CEO to just reflect. Come back to me just after this break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Angela, it's a huge warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Thank you very much. I really do well. And thank you for inviting me in your community.
Well, it's amazing that you're coming in now. The community is growing. We have over 200 episodes.
And I'm not surprised because you have such an authentic dialogue and you bring such a diversity of perspectives. And I think this is what people value most.
Well, that's very high praise. I might just stop there. It doesn't get with that. Listen, Angela, I've just given a little oblique summary there just to whet people's appetite in relation to the conversation that we're having. But I was actually talking about Avon because you were the CEO for a number of years of Avon. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes.
When did you take on that role?
In 2020, in January, just before the pandemic.
I know. Great timing, isn't it?
Indeed.
But you'd actually worked for Avon for a number of years prior to that,
for
correct?
For 25 beautiful years, yes.
Where did you first start your role at Avon?
I started in Romania initially.
Yes.
It was just freshly out of communism, I would say. And okay. Avon came to open the market, like all other big global companies. And I had the chance to join them at the grassroots when it comes to hierarchical setup of the company as an area sales manager.
So when you first started, how big was the business then, when 25, 26
Globally,
years ago?
Globally, you mean it? It was still worth billions of dollars. I mean, it was a company who at that time already had more than a century of history and impact around the globe.
Yeah. I want to go, I say this a lot, I always like to go backwards before we go forwards, because I want to talk to you about your reflections as the global CEO for Avon. Let's go back. How did you end up at Avon? What were your passions as you were growing up, and what did you study? Did you know you would end up at a business like that, or tell me a little bit about kind of your earlier years.
I mean, now that you bring me back to them, I mean, imagine, I grew up in a communist country. For us, the life was quite predictable, and the way we would manage our education and the what we would expect then to do was quite prescriptive.
Right.
So on one hand side, you had that security, let's call it this way, and as well the principle of equality. I mean, I think this was the only good thing in communism, that it didn't matter where you come from, what you did, your background, are you a man or a woman. There was a relative equality when it came to the rights and privileges. Okay, not too many privileges, but there was absolutely no right to self-expression. Zero. Therefore, nobody would dream. I mean, you would imagine, you would hear of stories, although we are quite isolated, of information coming from Western countries. Still, I would never dream. I would have never had the means and nor the courage to dream that one day I would be leading a global company.
Right. And what was that like when you say there was perhaps a level playing field because of the regime, but no ability to express yourself? Because obviously in the role as a leader and a global CEO,
Yes.
You have to express yourself.
Absolutely. I mean,
what was it like for you to shift from almost one extreme to the other?
I had this opportunity at an early age. I mean, I was very young when revolution happened, and then when Avon came to open the market. So I grew up and learned from them. I learned directly through experience.
Right.
The value of critical thinking, the value of expressing yourself, expressing your views, creating your distinct value, the value of collaboration.
Yeah.
Yes. The value of as well individual impact and community value. So I would say I learned by side of Avon all these things. Yeah.
What was perhaps the biggest takeaway for you, or the biggest reflection for you coming out of that regime and then having the opportunity that you had at Avon? Was there something that stuck with you that you either brought with you or in some ways you pushed away as just a reflection?
I think I brought with me that sense of humility in a way, the understanding that it's never about you.
Right.
Yeah, so there is no value in centering your activities all on yourself.
Okay.
Yes, there is always value in trying to find, you know, through the network, through the co-creation, through partnerships, to always find ways to get progress in an area or another.
Okay.
Yes. So this is what I brought with me. And I think that there was, because we were pushed back. So from a trauma, it became at the end one of the attributes I always used in my relationship with others. What I also brought was the what to avoid.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
And I would say extremes. Understanding that there is no belief in this world.
Yes.
Business-wise, social-wise, economic-wise, that pushed to an extreme would benefit anyone. You know, you always have to be quite agnostic about things.
Okay.
I mean, this is what I brought. I mean, I refused throughout my entire life to be an extreme believer in anything. I treat with respect belief of any kind. I inform myself. I'm curious to understand the roots of it.
Yes.
But I keep myself with a discipline into an agnostic position, always questioning.
Yes.
What other perspectives we could get here? What other views could we have here?
That's a real strength, isn't it? That ability to be curious about somebody else's perspective or belief, even if you don't agree with it.
Yeah.
But just in some ways to be the humble inquirer and also, you know, help me understand, explain more, take me a little deeper. Yeah. And we live in a world, don't we, where we've got extremes all around us. I've just come back from the US and they've just been in election mode. So the world is very polarized. The world has got
choices,
some.
Yes.
I know. And you're having to lead in that environment as well, not just as a CEO, but generally. Help me with this. Help people understand just a little bit about Avon, because I'm sure anyone watching or listening will know iconically about Avon, but perhaps not. So just tell everyone a little bit about what Avon does and its history and legacy.
I mean, imagine Avon was founded in 1886. And the business model from the very beginning was designed to enable women sharing beauty with their micro communities.
Yes.
Initially at home, then at their work, creating a business model that would share the wealth creation with them rather than just with a set of defined shareholders. So from the very beginning, there was a blend of beauty focus, which is made it a player well recognized for its breakthrough innovation in beauty for so many years, but as well recognized for its beauty model. Yes, it was a direct selling and created from the very beginning this purpose of empowering women. And that was so many years before women even had the right to vote.
You say 1886? It's a long time ago, right?
Exactly, exactly. So this was a business model. And over the years, it really grew its relevance, not only through its ability with its own in-house R&D state-of-art capabilities and facilities, but as well through its business model around the world. It found its relevancy as an alternative to other channels out there, like retail and later on online. And it followed women wherever they were.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last decade, I would say starting 90s to 2000, Avon started to lag behind the other players.
Right.
Somehow, you know, losing or its own ability to keep the pace with the market. And the initial purpose was follow women where they are. Make sure you are an enabler, an empowerer for them through beauty, through the business model, where women change their habits.
And this is across the world as
that
well.
That is across the world. Right. It's not just in developed countries. No. And but because Avon continued to open new geographies, who provided a significant contribution to the overall revenue, somehow it waited too much to address the radical questions. You know, are we still relevant? Is the love that we read in all our focus groups and quantitative researches around the world, is it a love of relevance? Is it a brand relevant for me? Or is the love of nostalgia the way I love my grandma?
So this is what you talked about. Legacy can sometimes be a burden.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. Where everyone would smile whenever we would say, look, I'm from Avon, especially here in UK, people would automatically say, ding dong.
Yeah.
You are the ding dong Avon
lady.
Multiple
generations will remember the Avon lady.
Those iconic, exactly, iconic setup. Yet, we had to come, and I grew up growing up with the company.
Yep.
I went going through different roles around the world, working in Russia, Eastern Europe, Middle East, in Africa.
Yes.
Then as well, I had a top role of business model innovation in New York, leading the global scale, the overall business model innovation for the company. I knew this moment will come where we really have to, we'll get to that inflection point when we'll know there is no way we can continue doing more or less of the same.
Yeah. Let's help with the scale. At one point, how many contractors did you have, people who were selling
Avon representatives?
Avon representatives, exactly.
I mean, they were, at one moment, I think the maximum we have achieved when we had our full global portfolio still part of Avon's ownership would be 6.5 million representatives.
6.5, or across the world?
Across the world.
And then employees?
Employees would be more than 20,000 at that point.
At that point. And global revenues approximately?
Would be, I think, around... I don't remember exactly. It would be maybe $8 billion.
So this is a large global iconic business.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it challenged business models, didn't it? Because it had, as you say, over 6 million at one point. It was a social selling model, wasn't it?
A social selling model. I mean, women would...
But it's iconic.
Absolutely. Women everywhere would be enabled to do something they liked, which is to talk about the products they love.
Yeah.
And then get a direct commission for it. We haven't been a multi-level marketing per se. I mean, we didn't create kind of a selling the dream.
Yes.
We are just having a straightforward value proposition for our representatives.
Yep.
And amazing product to be sold.
Okay.
Yet, we kicked the can for more than a decade on modernizing our technology.
Right.
Being a New York Stock Exchange quoted company under the pressure of the market to deliver quarter in, quarter out more and more value to the to shareholders, we kept postponing the infrastructural big investments.
Yes.
And as well, the proper restructuring of the company. Of course, we went initially into a tactical defensive mode of cutting costs by like a haircut, is not necessarily, it's not strategically the right thing to do. And then we went after obvious immediate sources of profit in our P&Ls, like cutting training and development, cutting
these
marketing.
These are short-term wins, aren't
they? It's a short-term wins. Okay. Never work out for long-term. And of course, in the market, when we had such a formula, no more advertising, no more training and development for our representatives, no more meaningful enablers for our own associates. So when you don't have that kind of fuel for growth, then what you do, you start acting defensively, and that is tactically have an aggressive merchandising, start discounting a lot.
Okay.
And you start doing all these offers, like buy 5 for the price of 4, buy 10 for the price of 2, whatever. So we created... To a level that on one hand side was serving the purpose of still leveraging our high capacity manufacturing capacity around the world, but diluting severely our brand equity.
Right.
Then we swung, speaking about division and binary choices, the entire, and I remember because I was part of those school of thoughts for and dilemmas for so many years, where key executives, as the executive team was changing, we changed three CEOs over the 12 years.
Right.
And the key dilemma was, strategic dilemma was, are we a brand or a channel?
Right.
And you would say, okay, that's a healthy question. Well, not really the right question, because we swung, speaking about extremes.
Yep.
From one side to another, to many years being just a channel, which means we brought in all kinds of products. We didn't care about the beauty equity any longer. To a level, and I always say this story, where we saw ourselves with a brochure launched in US with a screwdriver on its cover.
Right.
This is ridiculous, right? For a beauty company.
Okay.
I mean, albeit it was a Father's Day, but still.
Right.
I mean, this was not recognizable any longer
core,
a beauty
was
brand.
It? No. Okay.
This was not a beauty brand. It was a brochure already selling everything.
So it was a platform, as you said.
It was almost a platform. It was just a channel. Then we had another executive team which came in and said, hey, you lost your beauty equity. This is not good, because people don't know what to understand from what you're selling.
And right.
You are just a, you know, selling everything platform. So let's swing back to be just a beauty. But we pushed it so far under this ambition to become kind of a Chanel. And we lost the attribute of being a democratic brand.
Okay.
We increased prices a lot, curated, but focused on our portfolio only on a certain luxury product. So we stranded the customers who have been loyal to us for decades.
Okay.
And we lost the power of the channel, because all of a sudden, all our marketeers became very defensive against that selling. And look, our millions of ladies around the world, they are not brand equity builders. I even heard that, which is preposterous.
Right.
Yes. To think that the very women who build up this brand for more than a century, all of a sudden they were offending the brand.
Right.
Yes. So we went through these swings. And of course, because there was no consistency, we would push things too far, left or right. We lost our way. And here we are towards the end of around 2019, when Avon was already going through a very, very difficult time.
Yes.
Almost to the edge of its own demise. Yes.
Wow.
Almost to the edge of
which
its
existence. Which is every
existence.
Leader's biggest nightmare, that irrelevancy has kicked in or lost.
Irrelevancy, financial problems.
Yep.
And wow. Then we had a white knight coming to the rescue. It was Natura. Natura is a very respected brand in Latin America. They have already shown a successful, acquisition of Aesop.
Yes.
And the Body Shop.
Yep.
So they had the ambition that with Avon they would be now having a global reach. I think that was a strong attribute of Avon for them.
Millions of people there.
Millions of people. Still,
yes.
I mean, I'm even amazed how they stood by our side, all
right.
These millions of people, despite of our inconsistency and our wobbles over this time. And
so they acquired Avon.
So they acquired Avon. And at that time, they were looking. I was happy to see that. At that
yes.
time, I was already 20 years in the company, having
right.
led many clusters around yep. the world. And they did their due diligence. They went from in all key top markets, from Philippines to Brazil, from, I don't know, UK to South Africa.
Yep.
And they kept asking people like, questions like, where do you see your business currently? What were the maybe the most encouraging projects you've been part of?
Okay. And so they were on a listening.
So they're
exercise.
On listening mode. Yes,
okay.
Part of this due diligence and their own introduction to the business. And there were three applicants to become the CEO. It was clear that the current CEO
yep.
wouldn't continue. And
Why did you apply?
I haven't applied.
You hadn't, so you weren't part of the three here.
That's a beauty. I love a good story.
I love a good story.
That's a nice story. I was actually with all my many of my trusted kind of colleagues with whom we've shared the hardship of so many years. You know, we are placing our. We created a bet house of who of the three will get the role.
Okay.
With lots of pros
so
and
you
cons.
Were an outsider,
it was exciting.
I was an
outsider. We are on a side of this big game, and then of course we are doing our own scenarios, and it was fun to be on the side looking who is going to be the CEO. And the reason I haven't applied is that I thought, okay, I'm 20 years in the company. It's time for me to also do something else. I love Avon. I have always loved Avon, you know, to bits. But I thought, okay, this is the moment. I will help the new CEO because in a way, I knew they will be coming asking for my support because I've been to so many clusters. I had this understanding of the local cultural nuances, the transformation we've been through, what went well, what didn't go well. And I was quite assertive, and people appreciated that, to hear things not the way they were, the way I thought they were.
That's it. Okay.
So they are going through assessments for 3 months, and this was at the end of 2019. So we are waiting anxiously to see who of them will take the role. And then I'm getting a call to go to Sao Paulo, where the headquarters of Natura is, and meet the founders of who are the board members as well of Natura. Right.
Did you know why at this point? Or?
At this point, I assumed no. I assumed they want to ask me personally to support their new selected CEO because I knew they went through such a serious assessment. Yes, with all these external companies being involved to assess them and to you know go through all the series of interviews. So I'm going, okay, I said they've selected. I knew the week after that they are supposed to announce a CEO because it was already the time. And they want to ask me to support. I said, of course, I'm going there. So I went there, and after the entire day that where they showed me their R&D center, their headquarters, we talked a lot about Natura, which I found really exciting. I said, okay, they want to win me over. They know I'm an informal kind of connector with, with so many veterans
with
at Avon. So
history.
They want me to properly promote Natura. I was already sold. I mean, I loved Natura. And then at the end of the day, when I was already very tired, they told me, look, we've been everywhere around the world and we constantly heard your name. The thing is with internal candidates, there is no way to hide. So we know a lot of your failures, success, the way you connect to people. It's not like you come with a story from other companies. It's an open book. And when we are, so we know. And we think that for the transformation that Avon needs to go, people need to trust their leader because this has to be a radical transformation. So we want you to be the CEO. So
do you think they knew this when they asked you to come over to Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That it was an agenda.
It was an agenda. I mean,
but
they
had no idea.
I love this story. They wanted to be in person. They wanted to be there when we talk about that.
Okay.
So, and then from there, it's history. Initially, I have to be honest, I said no.
Right. Why?
Because I was not convinced at that moment in time that they understand the cost and the implications of a radical transformation. You know, it's easy to talk. I mean, we hear politicians all day,
But were they going to give you the real mandate for change?
That's the real mandate and support and enablers, because that was not one person transformation that we needed an army of leaders.
So you said no. Did you leave having said no?
Yes.
Okay. You got on a plane back to...
I got on a plane back saying no.
I love this story.
Absolutely. I said no. Okay. So by the, and I arrived Thursday morning. I remember by day I arrived home and then I got another call.
Yes.
And they said, you know, what is that you would lose? Just let us know. What is it? I mean, this could be maybe the most meaningful transformation of Avon. And you said you loved the company.
Yes.
And you love your team. So they went around and they picked up my biggest motivators, like the team, the
they've
seen for years. Yeah. And they said, we are by your side. So we love your vision.
Yes.
And you'll be having the entire board by your side to do this transformation.
And what did you say at that point?
I said yes. I said yes before I even, I mean, I haven't seen any package when I said yes.
That's more about your passion for the business, isn't it?
I haven't seen anything. I think.
What was it that changed your mind? What was it that swung you? Was there something when you thought, I needed to hear that, and now my answer is different? Or was it cumulative?
The fact that I also left them time to absorb the information I have given them in relation to the pain that transformation will inflict on all key stakeholders.
Okay.
And understanding that if they really want to go for it and gain back the Avon's groove and vibe and relevancy, this is an end-to-end, literally end-to-end, from R&D to supply chain footprint to the technology legacy replacement to the commercial model, complete modernization and a brand complete overhaul. So it was really picking up from Avon only the essence of it, and then repackaging it in completely different
at this point in time
brand.
Forgive me, because this is a great comment. At this point in time, what was the essence? If you had to describe the essence of Avon at this point, when many things were not working and it needed radical overhauling, what was the essence?
The essence, and then what still makes it unique, was this, from the brand perspective, the high touch, the service that comes with the beauty.
Yes.
Understanding that beauty is more than just a product. Yes, it always requires confidence, and it comes many of the times through connections. Yes, through a beauty advisors, a friend,
the human element.
Would give you the confidence to wear that product.
Okay. Right.
And the other part was a purpose. At that time, we are a $1 billion contributor to women causes globally, which is amazing. It makes it the biggest philanthropic company in the beauty industry. And that compares with the top of the house beauty players.
Okay. Yes?
So we had decades, a century in the back fighting for women, which I think, again, it's the essence of what this brand, that this brand is more than, again, a beauty player. It's a movement. And I think this purpose combined with this high touch, brand, democratic as well, affordable beauty, it's like aspirational beauty at irresistible value, let's put it this way. I think that blend to me was the essence that had to be protected matter what.
So they listened to you in relation to what was the DNA of the business, what was the heart of the business.
Yes.
And you felt that they not only had listened, but they were going to give you a mandate to do what needed to be done.
When I said yes, this is what I assumed. That's why I was so excited at the end to take on the leadership. Although it was funny, imagine going back to all my colleagues just a week after.
Surprise.
We were having a drink in the bar, placing our bets. Yes, for who is going to be announced next week. And I'm saying, well, this is going to be me.
How did they react to that? We're going to come back to this one as well. How did they react to that initially?
I mean, of course they were all, laughing at initially, because they said, it's impossible that you didn't know about that. I mean, who on earth does that?
And you had no idea when you got on the plane to South Africa. That's why it's such a great story.
Yes.
Help me understand, because I want to get on to kind of some of the reflections that you've had. So there was a big transformation and a big series of changes that were necessary. And also COVID-19 hit, which we could have all done without. When you took on the role of CEO and when you stepped down as CEO, what had changed? What were you allowed to do, and what were you able to drive in that period? What were the biggest changes for you?
I think the biggest change
that
I would call out, and I'm extremely proud of it, is that we literally changed the history of Avon by tackling the biggest taboo of all times, which is just a direct selling channel.
Right.
So I went back to the dilemma. My entire team was divided, remember? So something thought that
channel,
we should
brand.
Be just a channel. The others would say, no, we are a brand. The channel is offensive. So we literally had to go out from the burden and the pain of this divisive question of what are we to why are we?
Okay.
So to go back and realign everyone to one thing we all believed.
Yep.
All the executives, all the people, they all believed, like, why are we here? Why a world would be a better place if Avon existed? Yes.
Yep.
What is it? And the purpose. So then we understood that even the camp who said, "Hey, we are a channel, not a brand."
Mm.
they were doing that for the love for their 5 million women who whose lives, you know, depend on our enabling. Yes, so it was out of love and respect for them. They didn't want to disable this earning opportunity for them. The other ones who really talked, no, we are a beauty company. Also, it was for the love of our amazing guest innovation and beauty portfolio that was built for so many years.
Yeah.
So the why was actually one. And that enabled us. That was the very first thing. And I think it helped me the fact that I was one of them.
Right.
To reinstill this kind of, let's zoom out first. Let's see the why.
Yes.
And then we are going to tackle together this division, these binary choices. And it ended up to be end-to-end. We are both a brand and a channel, and not just a channel, but an omni-channel. Because our founder didn't design just the direct selling. He designed a model that would benefit women. And that can happen in an omni-channel world if you design it correctly.
And we're now in an omni-channel world.
So let's find out how.
Okay.
So I think right now, Avon, as of this quarter, it's in 2,000 stores and the journey has just begun.
Wow.
With a meaningful partnership with Watson's, Rossmann's, Superdrug here in UK, with representatives as well, those who are retail savvy and really want to create an extraordinary earning opportunity with a retail franchise option around the world.
Right.
And with a new generation of representatives, digital natives who created their own TikTok, Facebook shops.
Right.
Yes. And of course, protecting, cherishing those representatives who still love the face-to-face.
Yes.
Traditional. Yes. Let's have a coffee chat and open the brochure and let's talk about beauty and life together.
Avon was quite new to social media, wasn't it?
Very much so. So we had to revolutionize. This is where the mandate actually turned to be one of the most difficult mandates, because obviously post-acquisition, we didn't have a massive capital for us to do this transformation.
Yes.
So going back to the board, I had to admit that, yes, I have a great plan, but I have to self-finance those plan.
Right.
And we're talking about $200 million.
Okay.
This was not small amount of money. Yes, nobody gives you $200 million. So I, my first lesson of a CEO was, do not ask for money. Actually offer money. So start with the value creation and then understand what the investment will bring you there.
What's the investment required for the return? Okay.
So this is where it started, managing paradoxes. We had to enable this high-touch omni-channel, where channels would not cannibalize one another, the biggest fear, but multiply one another, which actually has happened.
Right.
We had to completely rewire the way we worked together. So from an 11 layers, multi-hierarchical organization, slow, rigid, frustrated, tired, cynical even, you know how it is.
Yes.
We didn't have one middle management layer. We had multiple middle management layers.
Right.
Everyone is empowered for every decision. They needed 11 levels of approval of all kinds in
which
matrix.
Which makes you slow.
Very slow, not in sync with
and
your market.
And then vulnerable to disruptors.
And at the end, cynical. If you knew it takes so much time to approve even buying a bottle of water.
Yeah, you just don't
you
bother.
You wouldn't care. You don't bother an idea. Yeah, that's it. So we had to dismantle, first of all, the hardwiring before I post new values or new culture credo on the wall.
Yeah.
That was futile. Yes, just to call out, oh, by the way, from today we have a new culture. Let me post it on the walls everywhere. And that's it.
Gotcha.
So we had to change the hardwiring. We reduced it to 4 levels everywhere, this time to from an egocentric hierarchical setup to almost like a flat, focused, agile network of professionals who would work in tribes.
Yes.
We will not have one headquarters location.
The agility.
Very diverse teams. Okay. Yes, everywhere. We called our, my own team was not executive team. We called ourselves enabling leadership team. I said there is no way a CEO can call himself and his team executive. That time, the era of industrial leadership, where you'd have a commander on the top expecting people to execute it's over.
Yeah.
So we are here to enable. And because we cannot do this tremendous task of...
Without your people.
Thousands of transformations that were needed without everyone acting like a leader.
Right.
Everyone acting like a leader.
Okay. And Am I right in thinking that you went through a very rapid digital transformation? 8 weeks.
Pandemic.
I mean, the pandemic forced everyone to do. But is that right?
An eight-week
digital transformation for a multi-billion-dollar global
company. I think everyone will talk about pandemic as being their biggest hardship. But for us, was even a little bit more adventurous, let's put it this way, because we had a massive, in the summer of 2020, when everyone was just having their first kind of breath of, oh, I think I know how to handle pandemic. We had a massive cyber attack that halted our operations for 5 weeks.
Wow.
I never dreamt in my entire career that I would become best friends with FBI and NCA.
That's another episode, Angela, at some point.
We'll talk about that. Another chapter of the book, another one day. It was maybe the most scary, frightening and different type of leadership.
Do you know where it came from, that cyber attack?
Yes, I cannot talk about that. But Yes, okay. I do know where that cyber attack came from. I had to discover new dimensions of leadership on how to protect, first of all, the data of our people, which I found it was a paramount objective. And then the shareholders, and then the rest of the organization. So I had to prioritize very quickly what is it that we want from this exercise in order to...
Let me just ask you on a human level. How are you dealing with all of this layered on top of each other? So you're coming in as the internal candidate who wasn't a candidate for CEO. You're coming into a need for huge radical transformation. You're coming into a global pandemic. You're coming into a global cyber...
Yes.
On a human level, how do you deal with all of that as it ramps up and you're now the CEO?
Look, now looking back, it's much more fun telling you that.
I bet, right?
I mean, now I can narrate the story. I can even find the logic of all the things I've done, both bad and good.
But in the moment, how?
But I think at those times, you can imagine, I would live them with full intensity. And at one moment, you realize that crisis, it's your daily dish in your leadership menu.
Right.
And somehow I realized how scary it was that I allocated in my calendar almost prescriptively some time off for that day crisis.
Right, really.
And
at some point
it proved to be useful because I knew they keep coming. Like speak with the war that we were very vulnerable, completely exposed. Because we had a massive business both in Ukraine and in Russia.
Right.
And lots of other events that we've had around the world that were very severe, from the catastrophic, you know, natural events to social unrest. But all together, I would say what helped me essentially was that sense of nobody dies. I don't know how to call it. You know, the thing is that in business, we are blessed. We are not army generals on a battlefield. We are not the neurosurgeons,
isn't it? You found perspective.
I mean, there were very few situations. I had a few situations when my decisions could really make the difference between life and death. But I was not alone in making those calls.
Okay.
But outside of it, it's business. So therefore, it's good to gain the right perspective, again, to zoom out.
Yes.
And rewire the priorities. And the second thing is, once you settle those butterflies in your stomach, that overpowering stress that really clouds your mind, losing the ability to think straight. So once you zoom out from that initial, confusion of what comes first, then the next question is again why. Because once you understand clearly the purpose of you and others and on why we do whatever we do together,
yes,
the rest are just conventions that you realign in the right priority with a cold or maybe rational business mind, never losing the heart of what's important, which are purpose and people.
Okay.
Yes, because I think this is what kept me centered in many of big crises. But I think above all, because crisis can be managed. By now, I don't think there is a crisis that can face me, although world keeps surprising us.
Yeah.
But being in Turkey during the terrorist year, being in Russia, you know, I've been part very close, like meters away from two terrorist attacks, one in Moscow, one in Istanbul. So when you go through these personal, professional, high intensity events, somehow the sensitivity level changes.
Okay.
So So you are able, much easier, to kind of distance yourself from the event and choose what's important.
A lot is said about the resilience of a leader. Where's your resilience coming from?
I think resilience comes from my, in a way, curiosity.
Okay.
Yes, curiosity. If you look at any situation, especially the new ones, when we are in an uncharted territory, and this is what these situations are bringing us, is there is no playbook for any leader in this world, how to lead through pandemic, how to lead through a cyber attack, how to lead through a war crisis. There is no such thing we have in any of the real playbooks out there. But then if curiosity is still there, and intellectually you feel that itch and that stimulation to try to learn the new rules, to engage everyone by your side, to not to be a lone explorer, to enthusiastically, despite the pain of the situation, to enthusiastically explore ways to create a meaningful movement forward. Because I think that's what we're all about. Yes, it's about progress. Okay. And this is what I try to do with Avon. I try to do it with, on a personal level. Is it painful? By all means, yes. Is it worth? Yes.
I'm hearing lots of clues there in relation to, you've mentioned movement a couple of times, curiosity as a mitigating factor as well. And I know that we've chatted before, and you sent me some thoughts in relation to five key reflections. And I think a number of them come out, but I'm going to give them names, and I'd love to just get your thoughts on this as well. You've already talked about this as well, but your first reflection was a new type of leadership is required. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you mean by that particular reflection.
The world is changing dramatically. Yes, and so it's. I know we are still through inertia trying to re-question, you know, how to connect or how to learn our information or how to, as a humankind, you know, do business together, collaborate. The reality is that if we only talk about consumers, and I'm not talking any specific industry here, it can be any product or service, they don't choose any longer like in the 80s, only by the series of marketing P's like product, place, promotion, you name it, yes? They are already very consciously allocate a very different responsibility to the companies they are buying their service or product from. They are expecting, first of all, a relationship, an instant gratification. They want to feel they bought something useful to them. Yes, they want to self-express with that purchase. Second, it's about as well responsibility. And this is not just sustainability, you know, to for the company to show that somehow they protect the climate, the environment, they show the responsibility for the future, but as well for direct impact to my own community right now. Does this company really cares about my community, my kind, my country, my region, my continent, whatever? Yes. So it's all about social impact as well. So outside of this gratification, gamification, social responsibility, it's clear that the companies are expected to be more than politicians. The companies are expected to be partners to create a better environment for us all, because they have the means, they have the voice, they're here. So it's time to really act. When you say a force for good, I don't see it in a greenwashing way. I see it in a responsible, almost a mandate way.
Okay.
So world is changing. Well, in such a world where as well you have this turbo VUCA environment, nothing is predictable any longer, from policies to currencies to, look
it's
at the
all
stock
changing.
Market. What happened with the stock market in just a week? Yes, it's so volatile. It's the least prescriptive times that during our lifetime. So with such a volatility, what you need is agile people, people who can react in real time. No organization that is led by one commander, one leader, or a leader and his immediate team of leaders can succeed keeping the pace with such a multidimensional expectation of their customers and the pace, the speed of the market.
Okay.
So what you need? You need an army of leaders. We talked about it. You need empowered network of professionals in markets, at global scale, in functions, in all aspects of the business, from the one who welcomes your people at reception and the way they create an experience to those creating a financial, allocation of resources, an army of leaders who really are versatile. They understand more than they just do every day. They understand their impact at a larger scale and act as such. Or to have an army of leaders, you can't order leaders what to do.
Okay, tell me more.
You can't expect them just to execute. They are leaders, right? So you need to be treat them,
they've got to be
them
empowered
like leaders.
And autonomy.
They want to be enabled.
Which
even
is what you were
empowered.
By
the
board,
they have
the
innate
right?
power.
Okay.
So you want to enable, you want to be a connector, you want to be a multiplier.
Okay.
So then what you become like a pulse of energy in this network, like a node. I'm not sure if it's the right word, like a node of energy into a network, if you can just visualize it, that creates exactly those connections in between people. And enable creates a framework
right.
that gives them the freedom and responsibility to use that freedom to act as a leader, as a mini CEO, if mini maybe is not the right word, as a CEO in their own role.
In their own careers.
In their own careers, gotcha. No matter where they are
okay.
on the hierarchical scale.
I love that. Let me ask you from the second one, your thoughts on this, from peer to leader, because you were a peer to many people, and then suddenly the CEO. Now, a lot of people get promoted from within. How do you make that transition from peer to leader?
This has been my pain my entire life,
I know,
the way.
You've been there for
I've 20 been
plus
promoted
years, right?
11 times.
Exactly.
So always for 11 roles from a,
so how
from
do you
a
do
peer,
that?
I became the leader. I would say a funny story from my beginning, my very first promotion, when I went back from opening Serbia and Montenegro. I went back to my own country, to Romania, to become this time, the very first time, a general manager for the country. So the very first time I came in, I went to the office of the previous leader of the country, by the way, a great believer and supporter of mine, a big dominant Serb, who would only have his way. I mean, you need to imagine. I mean, he was had an extremely dominant presence. You would really feel when he enters a room.
Okay.
So I'm going into his office. Literally, his chair is not just, like metaphorically. His chair was too big for me. So the very first thing, I had to change the chair. But then, to my surprise, I understood that the way people perceive you once you got a leadership role, they automatically place you in a box.
Okay.
Which, if you comply, it's extremely isolating. The very next decision, which I didn't do, was that all of a sudden we are having three floors at our headquarters, and on a third floor where the general manager office was, you would have the restroom, yes, the toilet, and that was for men. Because it was easier for the previous general manager to go to his floor than to go to the next floor. So we
Understood.
Would have... Alternatively, yes, for each floor,
okay.
one designated restroom.
Yes.
Yes, good. The very first thing my team changed in the very first day, all of a sudden, I saw that they changed the restroom size because they assumed that now if they have a female general manager,
right.
everyone should change their habits because now she would go to her own floor, which I found ridiculous. I had to think about it. Initially, I laughed a lot about it. Moreover, some of my ex-colleagues, those who really had a good relationship with me, they sent me a cynical kind of, congratulations, your first strategic decision as a general manager in changing the signs on a toilet was really great. Keep going, girl.
Came from someone.
But I understood one thing. I understood that people automatically expect you to behave in a certain way, walk in a certain way, do things in a certain way.
And they're all watching.
Just because they are conditioned to certain types of leadership.
Okay.
And it can be very tempting to go into that box, to comply with everyone's view.
Their expectations.
And luckily enough, I learned through some critical failures as well.
Yes.
Quite soon in my career, with that very first example, a fun story that I gave you, that going into that box would be my biggest mistake. So I have to create my own pattern, yes.
Okay, I love that as well. Tell me about this. So be a multiplier, not a pleaser. There's probably some link there, obviously.
It is a link with the story as
well.
With
these two.
It is a link with the story as well.
Tell me what you mean by that.
of course, being part, you know, being a gang with my peers at all times, we all know that. It's yes. normal. I mean, companies are communities. People do gossip. People do share opinions, perspectives. Humans. Is their way to share values? Is their yeah. way? I've never been against the gossiping in such with such definition, because it's the way people actually communicate who they are.
Yeah.
Yes, what they think about certain matters. So as long as it is not harming anyone, it's a way to understand people. So I was one of them. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm having this position where my role is as well to assess their performance and making sure that they are properly enabled to do their job and perform at their best. And with that, I've been many times tempted to continue being one of the guys, one yeah. of the gang, and pleasing people yes. and losing the direction again of the why I was there. So the one way I try to tackle this challenge on how to become a multiplier and yes. not a pleaser was to, first of all, call out very early in the process to people what I am, what I'm not, why we are in this together, mm-hmm. what's in it for them as well, not just what's in it for us as a team. And show that being kind and sharing, you know, the same mission together. It's not like we are working one for another. So I created the freedom for my people and myself and never working for another person. We worked under a certain purpose and under certain objectives. So being together. Friends one with another doesn't mean cutting each other a slack.
Right.
Being kind doesn't mean avoiding tough decisions.
Okay.
Because the why, the purpose, we all work against with different responsibilities. Yes, I had different responsibilities for every role. It's never to compromise this the value of professional value we signed for.
Okay. Yes. There's an accountability piece
so
there as
once
well.
Once we
isn't
made
there?
This clear, you don't work for me, and yep. therefore I don't work for you. We are both working, which means we keep each other accountable. I have my own responsibilities. I'm a general manager. Yes, you report hierarchically to me. But in reality, we are partners.
Yeah.
We are traveling towards the same purpose, each with his own professional expertise. We need each other.
Okay.
Yes, our knowledge and experience and responsibilities are complementary.
Towards that purpose.
Exactly. So we don't have to create compromise. Yes.
Okay. I think we're probably bleeding into the fourth one as well, because we're talking about now unity amongst division.
Yes.
And we talked about channel, brand, how do you find that? So what is your kind of key message for unity amongst division?
I mean, look in the world, yes, it's like the short-termism of the stock markets versus the long-term sustainable strategies.
Yep.
Is it a man or a woman having a certain role? Is it a young or an experienced senior person? Is it for somebody from the East or somebody from the West?
Yeah.
Is it a Muslim or a Buddhist? Is it that or that? And in business, we are faced with binary choices because it's easier for us to differentiate it from contrasting colors
yeah.
every day. The devil is in choosing one side
yes.
without being agnostic to the nuances in between the two.
Right.
And the value that we can maximize just by choosing the best from the both extremes.
Right.
And this is what we've done. I mean, we had this division business-wise, but there was multiple others in big choices that we've made along the time in regards to the credo of the company, where we've been tempted to choose either one side or another. And at the end, we got much better value from the end-to-end formula,
right.
Managing the paradox, understanding that is never one solution, and you have to re-optimize your position every day.
That paradox is something that leaders are having to
grapple with. It has to be managed.
Yes,
it doesn't have a straightforward solution. So to me,
gotcha.
That was one of the biggest energy drivers, and that helped tremendously in this transformation at Avon. That
yep.
really positioned Avon right now for a completely new journey, new chapter.
Well, let me ask you about the fifth one, and that's your role or your thoughts about redefining imposter syndrome.
Yes,
just tell me about that.
I'm asked, and that's interesting because I'm invited to many podcasts, webinars, conferences, in different panels. For female audiences to talk about what it is to be a female leader.
Correct.
I haven't seen many conferences where men would be asked the same. And I talk a lot. I mean, one of the subjects that never misses on these agendas, it's imposter syndrome, which I find very discouraging, to be honest. Maybe I don't understand well the definition of what imposter means. Imposter to me, it's a very negative word.
Yes.
While I'm seeing the self-doubt, if imposter syndrome is about the self-doubt, I'm seeing self-doubt as a creative force in the universe.
A way of learning.
A way of learning. I mean, of course, it can get its lows when self-doubt can not show you the light. But if properly used as a source of energy and not something I'm trying to hide and press back and push back, I think it's a huge multiplier. For me, self-doubt was in the form of a question I ask myself many, many times. And that question is, and it's a painful one. I don't recommend it to those weak of, with a weak of heart, because it's if, and it can be applied everywhere, by the way, as a partner in your marriage, as a parent, as a leader in your business. It's like if people around myself could choose again, nowadays, if they, who they choose as their leader, which, by the way, is not your people who choose you as a leader. It's your bosses who choose as a leader. And many people don't understand that.
Then they have to accept that choice.
They have to accept that choice. So would they choose me today? Okay. And what do I do today? So I'm again their choice tomorrow. And that question can lead to very painful, sobering answers.
Yeah.
When you realize you cannot take as granted anything that you have done in the past, if the value you add today, the learning you keep on acquiring today, is not valuable for your stakeholders today.
Wow, I love that as a question for any and all leaders to reflect on and ask themselves. But as you say, there might be a difficult answer to that question. Listen, Angela, you've been an absolute superstar from coming into the studio and having this conversation. There's so much I think we could have talked about that we may have to have you back. So you'll have to come back to the wonderful studio.
And we haven't talked about adventures in different markets like Saudi Arabia.
I know, we talked about that before we started recording.
We'll do that again for another occasion.
I just want to say a massive thank you for taking the time to come into the studio and be part of the Leadership Enigma. It's incredibly kind of you. And I'm looking forward to this one going live. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. A pleasure talking to you.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.